Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in San Francisco, California today. And as always, I'm joined by...
It's Bob Bazanko in Niles, Ohio. And very fortunate, very happy today to have a repeat guest with us to talk about something that's been in the news quite a bit lately. We're here with Dr. Sophia McLennan, who is the director of the Center for Global Studies and a professor of international affairs and comparative literature at Penn State, and the author of the book we talked to you about, which was, I think, 2 years ago, Trump Was a Joke. She's an expert on satire, has been interviewed and published in media all over the country. And obviously, this has become a fairly important issue, a big issue in the last couple of weeks, with especially stories revolving around Stephen Colbert and South Park. So we just want to talk a little bit about how that's working. When we talked to you a couple of years ago, we talked a lot about Trump's thin skin and how satirists got to him. And you know, we went all the way back to Stephen Colbert at the Gridiron Dinner and so forth. And now it's become, I think, would you say it's become more nefarious, a little more, I mean, it was always serious, but is it a little more striking to you now?
Which part is more striking?
I think the cancellation of Colbert, which I don't think any of us are really buying the story that CBS is putting out.
Absolutely. I think one thing is similar to the first Trump administration, which is that Trump is incredible. It shows a consistent thin skin approach to any mockery, any humor, can't take it, is extremely, and we've seen it not just with humor, he's extremely anxious about his image. And if anything comes out that he thinks is in some way devaluing his brand, he's going to come after you. So the fact that he has thin skin and the fact that he would come after you, none of that's new. What's new is that he's having some success. This is a pretty significant sea change.
Yeah, we're seeing a capitulation now. A couple months ago, we had Ellen Schrecker on to talk about McCarthyism. And she said it's worse than McCarthyism. It's the worst she's seen because of that. And she was especially, I think, talking about universities who are caving in. Do you see the media in the same way now?
Absolutely. I think we've seen law firms, the media, and universities. If you take those three together and you process what they represent in terms of structures that not just offer pushback, but try to keep people honest, so to speak. The fact that we're seeing all three of those cave is a significant concern, I think.
And do you think, you know, an element of this is that Paramount was actually doing a merger with Sky Media, and they were partially waiting for the Trump administration to sign off on this. And so how much, and Sky Media, I believe, is owned by a billionaire, a right-wing billionaire, Larry Ellison. His son is the one who actually is going to be running Paramount. How much of it also is this sort of like business decision where Trump is actually able to flex his fragile ego in like bringing down someone's a very public critic of him?
I think one of the things that people forget is that pretty much all the media in the United States is a business venture, and it has absolutely no interest in doing anything else than making money. But the question is, at certain times in U.S. history, you're making money by doing good journalism. You're making money by having Walter Cronkite on the air, right? You're making money because people want that. And so it's never been the case that we had this sort of pristine moment with the corporate media, that it was doing anything other than effectively trying to make money. What's curious, because I just did a piece where I was comparing how CBS canceled the Smothers Brothers, right? So if you want to kind of sort of historical arc here, you know, the Smothers Brothers got canceled. It was very obviously a different time in U.S. history. There were literally censors that looked at the scripts of the Smothers Brothers prior to them taping their show. And we forget that because we got, after 9/11, weirdly, an era where, for the most part, particularly late-night comedians, had no filter. Bill Maher got fired. But after that big hit, people like Colbert and Stewart were on their shows and saying whatever they really wanted to say. And Comedy Central wasn't trying to limit them. They weren't dealing with censorship. Colbert spoke in front of George W. Bush to his face at the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Yes, there was criticism, but there were no calls to cancel his show. No, he really, if anything, it elevated his visibility. So that post 9/11 era was strange because the comedians really enjoyed a sort of censor-free zone for a while. And we had that same energy during the first Trump administration, where people remember Jimmy Kimmel was going really hard after Trump. And again, if anything, it just made people laugh, and he certainly wasn't getting pressure to change. And so I think what is concerning is probably the fact that we're seeing a more ideological bent in some of these mega media companies. Like, of course, we're used to Fox News, and some of your listeners will know about Sinclair Media, right, which controls a lot of local television. But thus far, like, the big mega entertainment media companies were just about being successful, right? Getting people to tune in. They didn't have large ideological investments. And we'd gone through, like I said, a period where we had break from that, and now it's snapping back. That's what I think is really concerning.
Was it surprising you to see them cave in, ABC and 60 Minute early on, started the he threatened lawsuits and they just really spurious lawsuits?
I just think about this. Let's do a parallel, right? Recall that Trump had this obsession with Obama's birth certificate. And this is well before, you know, anyone was taking him seriously at all as a politician, right? He was obsessed with it. So Bill Maher got on his show one night and said, look, I will give Trump $5 million if he can prove that he's not the spawn of an orangutan. At which point, Trump then produces his birth certificate, sends it over to Bill Maher's people with a letter saying, here's the charities that I want my $5 million to go to. Bill Maher laughs and says, yeah, too bad. No, not sending you $5 million. Trump sued Bill Maher for the $5 million, claiming some sort of like verbal breach of contract. And the story is a great story because, of course, it doesn't really go anywhere because Bill Maher says, hey, we live in this country where we make jokes and you're a joke and deal with it. And no one was taking. So that question of was the speech serious speech? Could you recognize that Bill Maher didn't mean that? So that's a good case, right? This is a case. The guys who ran Spy Magazine, right? They were constantly getting sued by Trump. But again, in these sort of ridiculous, they'd say, no, prove to us that your fingers aren't tiny or something. And then he would outline his hand in gold marker and send it to them. And it was just a whole thing. There's really decades of this. This is part of what I break down in that book. Trump was a joke. So this issue where Trump couldn't take jokes and where he went after people who he felt, right, had hurt his brand, that part's not new. What's new, again, is this issue where people are reacting in different ways. And I think the 60 Minutes story is probably at some level far more disturbing in a way than what happened with Colbert, because no one who knows anything about the called facts in the case thinks that this would have gone anywhere. Can you imagine doing serious mainstream media and never editing an interview? This is absurd. And talking to argue that it helped build Kamala Harris's credibility when she lost. Like, where would the case be? There's no case at all. Zero. So $16 million for that?
Yeah.
It's really worth feeling very concerned that they decided to just, and of course, it's not the first of it. We saw a process here. We're seeing Columbia University caving. And then, of course, in their case, they're caving and there's no end in sight to it. Yeah. I think that's the part that is both disturbing and, to be frank, really perplexing. Because up until recently, these people weren't going to let Trump bully them at the same level. Because there were casualties under the first Trump administration, right? So there was a cartoonist that worked for the Pittsburgh Gazette. He lost his job. So it's not that there weren't any casualties, of course. It's just that it really was arguably not as bad. It wasn't disturbingly bad. And now it is.
One of the characteristics of McCarthyism was a lot of the repression is what I would call internal. It was like the unions going after people or the universities going after professors or whatever. And in a sense, that's kind of what we're seeing here with CBS that canceled the Colbert Show. How much of that do you think, though, was actually based on interference from, if not Trump himself, people around him? And how much it was because, like, it's, I don't watch Colbert every night, but I see the clips the next day. Obviously, they're everywhere. And when Colbert said, he used that phrase, big fat bribe, to discuss the signing the lawsuit, that was internal. So how much of this do you think was, obviously, Trump has a great deal of ability, a great deal of juice to pressure people. But how much of it do you think is CBS just being pissed off at him for airing dirty laundry, so to speak?
It's a fantastic question. And that's where, again, having a reasonably long memory on how Colbert reacted to CBS over the years is useful, because he went after them plenty of times.
Yeah.
Remember with Les Moonves, when he had to step down as CEO, there's the whole history there.
Yeah.
Colbert is on The Late Show. His persona shifted some, and some would have said he became a little more anodyne. He was a little less edgy. He didn't have the punch that he had on The Colbert Report. But the fact is that he certainly had his moments, right, where he went right for it. And he, just in keeping with the Letterman legacy, he was going after the corporate bosses. That was part of the shtick, right? I mean, if this were the kind of thing that got you canceled, Letterman wouldn't have made it past his first year.
Yeah. I remember I watched Letterman more frequently, and that was a big part of his act. And I think the day after, didn't he put out like a 30-minute compilation of him making fun of CBS bosses or something, you know, top 10 list?
Yeah. It was something like CBS is just BS, isn't anything.
Yeah. You can't spell CBS without BS or something like that.
But I think the bigger issue is that it was, in fact, that the fact that CBS had Letterman on and allowed the space for Letterman to mock them. My research would show that if you let people make fun of you, it actually can build your strength, right? If you overreact, then people disrespect you. They think you lack integrity. The human condition is, if you can't take a joke, something's wrong with you. And so the bigger issue is just a lack of a capacity on the part of both CBS and Paramount to recognize that this decision will cost them so much, right? People will simply boycott them over this, because basically they even if they weren't big Colbert fans, right, they will react to this by thinking, what kind of credibility do you have if you're not allowing this guy to make a joke about you? So the cost of them is going to be pretty substantial, I think.
It's similar to the Washington Post when Bezos like really started throwing money to the Trump Inauguration Committee and talking about how the op-ed page was not going to talk about anything other than economic liberty or whatever. And they saw hundreds of thousands of people. I did it. Cancel their subscriptions. I think that there's actually calls for that with Paramount.
Absolutely. And I think what you're seeing there is that regardless of your party politics, people just don't like that. They don't. And they will react to it. Because again, whether it's news media or whether it's satirical comedians, they want a sense of authenticity and integrity. And this kind of stuff really hurts that.
Yeah. Just to talk about the chill factor for a minute. In your book, you make a point as how these late night comedians are actually some of who is doing the actual undermining of Trump's brand, right? It's like, Trump comes across as a tough guy, or that he's invincible. And I would actually say a lot of people in the Democratic Party treat him like he's unbeatable, even though I disagree with that. But do you think this will have a chill effect on other late night comedians who go after, who are you know, Stewart or Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon or whoever, who regularly also criticize and make fun of Trump?
I like to say, tell a comedian, right, not to make a joke about a banana or whatever. And they can't, it doesn't, it's like they can't help themselves. So it tends to go the other way. It tends to go, our best example would be like Lenny Bruce, right? So tell him not to swear, right? Same thing with George Carlin. Say he can't say these 8 words. And what is he going to do? The best example of this, of course, is what happened with South Park, right after the South Park episode was a big, are you really? Is this the thing you're going to do? You're going to come after us? This is what we're going to do as a counter move. What I'm seeing is even more aggressive satire. One of the things I talk about in the book is that satire with Trump is so complicated because he's already a joke. He's already absurd. He's already hard to take seriously. So the traditional tools you have in the toolkit don't really work because he took them, right? He's already exaggerating. He's already doing all of these things. So what I observed was that the satire tended to go in one of two directions. It either was more crass and just vulgar, or more creative and sophisticated. And so I think that we've seen that come out exactly. Colbert came out right after Trump celebrated him being canceled and literally said, F. I mean, it wasn't. And he did it. He said, oh, and they put a frame up and it said something like sophisticated, eloquent comedy. And he literally just was like, go F yourself. So I haven't seen any gloves coming on. I haven't seen any gloves coming on. I've only seen them coming off.
Now, the South Park episode was only like, 4 or 5 days ago, so I haven't followed that. It doesn't seem surprisingly that there's been as much blowback, because you said that's very crass, very vulgar. Is that maybe because it's basically just on cable, or it's more of a cultish show, or do you expect them to feel the heat now, too?
Look, South Park has a long history of figuring out what the line is and just crossing it because they can. They don't. I had the good fortune of watching the show with a group of 20-somethings, and it was, when I watched the episode, it was very interesting to see their reactions, because they asked me, they said, do people understand this? And that's the thing about South Park, right? It's either you're just confused, or you go, oh, that was really cool, right? So there's something in the way they do it, where again, you could miss the joke and just think, oh, that's rude. So they have a history of going for these sort of, I think in some ways, like not totally different from what we sometimes see with Dave Chappelle. Am I being ironic or am I just being rude? Can you tell? And I think that those of us who really like that kind of satire, like we love it. And other people just go, oh, that was a lot. But to your point about why we haven't seen, certainly the White House responded to the episode showing that they were ended, et cetera. I don't know what more would you expect. Would Trump sue them? I mean, that's hard to figure out what other things might happen. Certainly those guys were protected because they just signed their deal. But I thought it was also funny that they came out and said they apologized. It was like a weird, ironic apology.
Yeah.
That was very funny. Get ahead of it. Say, oh, no, we're really sorry. We don't know what just happened.
What strikes me is, I swear, like every day I'll see some version of an article that's real and the headline or the caption will be not from The Onion. So to your point, like it is really hard to do satire. It's like, was it Paul Krasner when Kissinger won the Nobel Prize? He said, this is the end of satire or something like that. It's like kind of where we are again.
Those of us who have a long memory will say we've heard that satire we can't satirize the moment because it's too ridiculous. We heard it after 9/11 in a different context, like now everything has to be serious. Satire is incredibly nimble. It's incredibly resilient. It has its moments when it might have a hiccup, but at the end of the day, it will adapt. It's really just a fundamental part of the human condition. You see an abuse of power. You see somebody do something stupid. You see something not make sense. And your natural reaction is to use an ironic commentary to say something about this situation. And whether it's just average, everyday people, whether it's celebrities and performers, this just has been part of human existence for as long as we can record. I just did a book, An Introduction to Political Satire. And we talk about like satirical hieroglyphs, like stuff has been around.
It's interesting. Trump right now, I would actually say, as far as like public relations wise, this is like one of the worst crises of his political career with the Jeffrey Epstein file unraveling for him. It does strike me as interesting that they've decided to pick a fight with these people who have these big platforms. They're just going to be on the air until next May. South Park just signed up for this multi-year $1 billion contract, but all it's going to be is like, from now on, I think we're going to be hearing about Trump. I actually think we're going to be hearing a lot about the Epstein files. It just, it, for something that's bringing him down, even within his own base, is trying to, I don't think he's the most fourth. He's not, Bob and I often joke about how he's not the four-dimensional strategist that we all think he is. But it just strikes me as quite odd that he decided to pick a fight with them in this moment.
Yeah, except if we think about how he just has never been able to handle this concept that people would make fun of him, right? So his action to humiliation is really fierce. That's one thing. There's also some speculation that Trump just doesn't understand humor. I don't know if you guys remember, but I talked about how at Comedy Central did one of those roasts of him before he ran as a candidate. They offered him like scripts he could use because he has to do, he does the, at the end of the roast, right, he gets to come out. And so first it was, okay, I'll write my own. And then they said, dude, you can't, that's not funny. You can't say this. So then they offered him a script. And apparently, according to the insiders, that I think on Huffington Post, you can still see where they had, he blacklined out the original script. And he basically crossed out every joke. And again, like it would say, oh, something about, oh, I have a gold car. And he'd be like, no, I need to say I have 20 gold cars. So he would exaggerate things that were related to his persona as larger than life. And then he would take away the jokes. He's also just, I think sometimes it's not about being four dimensional. He doesn't really distinguish between, say, somebody on 60 Minutes, maybe something saying something negative about him, and a comedian. So yeah. One of the things that I wrote about in the book was that it was very strange that he would equalize them. He was often going after Saturday Night Live and Alec Baldwin's impersonations of him as though those were as serious a threat to his persona as, say, Anderson Cooper, for example. It's really perplexing.
Today, he's going after Beyonce. That's his target today. And then 2 days ago, he said he was going to sue the Wall Street Journal for $10 billion, which to me is more consequential, because if anybody's going to take him on, I would suspect it would be the Wall Street Journal. You know?
I mean, anyone who wants to take him on would seem good to me. But
yeah, exactly.
So on the one hand, we could say that Trump is incredibly savvy because he recognizes that in the sort of public sphere, Beyonce has the same, if not more, credibility and cachet than Anderson Cooper, let's say, sure, hypothetically. Sure. One could say that's smart. He's no longer saying, oh, the traditional news media is over here, and that's more important. The way they tell the story about me matters more than what Beyonce says or Taylor Swift or whoever it is that, yeah, he's pissed at. But so on the one hand, maybe that's smart because he's recognizing that all of those personas have power over his image. Some of us find that disturbing because that blending, incapacity, inability to recognize the differences in these different genres is of some consequence, certainly for our democracy.
Colbert now, one of my first thoughts was Colbert now has a free pass for what, 10 months. He can do whatever he wants because he's gone. And I'm wondering, do you anticipate that? One of the things Scott and I often talk about is, I don't know if you've seen the movie Bullworth from the 90s, which I love, because I think that was actually kind of Trump's idea. Just go crazy. Do you think Colbert might be even going further out there and doing this now? Because he's kind of a hall pass to do what he wants.
He does. And the other thing is that he doesn't have to worry about doing something that would get his staff fired.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things that people forget is, yeah, that when Colbert, prior to this decision, when he comes out, he makes the choice. Should I say this? Should I go after that? How hard should we hit? He's more than aware that a lot of people get their livelihood from his show. Sure. And I believe, based on what I know about him, that he's the kind of person who doesn't want to take chances with his staff's livelihood. You could see that with the group of them and what they did when they did Strike Force 5 and they were trying to raise money for their staff during the strike. So I think now that he doesn't have to worry that he could jeopardize anybody else, I think it will increasingly get, yeah, like really hard hitting. I will say, when everyone was asking questions about the time, I said, no matter what you thought, it was, if people weren't supposed to see the timing as related to shitting Paramount for the merger, they would have waited. Why wouldn't you wait? The only thing you do is make Trump happy with that.
Yeah.
Because waiting at least gives also Colbert a shorter runway to go loose.
Yeah.
And now, again, the sort of cause effect, it's so hard, you know, to not see those things as related. Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting. I look forward to seeing what they come up with, because after the big fat bribe, for example, I was like, I don't know what more you would say, but we'll see.
I just think, okay, I don't follow her as much, but did Jon Stewart have something on Apple TV that they took away too?
Yeah. So this with Jon Stewart. So I don't know if you were able to watch that show. It was called The Problem with Jon Stewart. And I really liked it because he would go after a super difficult issue, like race, not easy. And he would try to unpack why we are having so much difficulty having intellectually sophisticated conversations around some of these issues. He would bring in a panel and the conversations were in depth. And then he would do a podcast to accompany it where you go in even more. And it was really cool. Like, the show was smart. But it, of course, it wasn't going to appeal to as big an audience, because it really was like, you have to ask yourself, what am I going to do with the next hour? Do I really want to listen to Jon Stewart tell me, you know, the world is messed up again? So, of course, I even, as somebody who consumes this, it was less fun. It was more serious. Okay. That said, what happened with Apple TV was that Stewart had two points of conflict with them. One had to do with AI. They were getting really angry at him for that way in which he was covering AI, and particularly how AI was going to affect the entertainment industry. They didn't like it. And the other was him going after China. And so basically the story is Apple said, cut it out. And he said, not going to cut it out. And they said, okay, we're canceling it. So effectively he got canceled for censorship.
Didn't he also want to have Lina Khan on from the FTC? Was that one of the issues as well?
That could, I don't remember that.
At one point. Yeah.
But that wouldn't surprise me. So the point is, like, they basically were just pinned. He refused to listen to them. I mean, that's the thing. Both Colbert and Stewart, they don't need to work another day in their whole lives.
Exactly, yeah.
So they don't care. Yeah, but to your point, that's been what has made Comedy Central so great. Because we haven't seen Comedy Central try to pressure their talent at all. We don't know how that'll potentially change.
Yeah. Paramount owns Comedy Central.
Yes, Paramount owns Comedy Central as well as CBS. But of course, CBS had this sort of, it seemed, network obligation to be part of this more mainstream source of content. Whereas Comedy Central's always had said, okay, we have comedy in our name. Don't take us seriously. So, of course, South Park's, we've seen other really edgy programs come out on Comedy Central.
Yeah, and South Park's the second longest running show on television, I believe, after The Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, South Park has done a lot of different episodes that have been quite edgy. They sparked their own level of scandal, right?
Yeah. I've seen South Park episodes that pissed me off because I thought they were, but I didn't want to cancel.
That's the thing. That's what they want to do. You are their ideal viewer, right?
Yeah.
If they can't get to you ever, then something went wrong. So there has to be a moment where you're like, ooh. And that's what they're going for. Because they want you to examine the spaces where you're like, oh, that was too much. And so that's part of the whole deal with that show.
Yeah. Were you? One thing that's also strikes me is there are now outlets for somebody like Colbert that didn't exist, like when the Smothers was around. Smothers get canceled. They had a successful career, obviously. And they did go back on TV years later. But with Colbert, it seems like he could start his own show on YouTube or whatever, right? Isn't that what Letterman's doing now on YouTube or Netflix? I don't know what. But like, it just seems there are outlets now for these guys so that they can just move on and not really skip a beat.
I think that's where the whole sort of the sky is falling narrative that by having Colbert get canceled, that's it.
Yeah.
Satire's dead. No. It's certainly of some concern to see the possibility, right, that this long-term institution of late-night comedy may be coming to an end. But things change, right? And the sort of three networks, we adapted from that. We've had the cable television came. You know, think about all of the transitions. I remember like the impact that happened when Twitter first launched, like all of these sort of massive media shifts. They happen, and the first thing people think is, oh boy, it's the end of an era. But with something like political satire, this is coming back. Not coming back. It's just going to continue, but it's going to continue in forms that may be new to us. Yes. We had one of the things that was really noteworthy during the first Trump administration was that we had for the first time in U.S. history, through the platform of Twitter, an opportunity for average citizens to basically, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear, but shit talk the president, right? To his face. That we never had that. Obama had a Twitter, but he wasn't personally tweeting, and he certainly wasn't tweeting crazy stuff. So that dynamic didn't exist. So I would look back then, Trump would do a post, and I'd watch what the comments looked like. Of course, some were supportive, but many were actually satirical, average citizens using irony to just make fun of the president. We'd never seen that before. And so one could say, this was one of the ways in which we say a kind of gateway opening to what I call citizen satire. Everyday people just making jokes at power. So that we've seen, and that's not going anywhere. And so Colbert is not going to be on CBS. I mean, maybe he will retire because, frankly, the job he's been doing is tiring. Five nights a week is a lot of time away from your family. But should he decide to continue to be in that space where he's doing political satire, he's got a million options.
Yeah.
He can do a podcast. He can stream on YouTube. He could get a contract with Netflix, who we don't know. Hasan Minhaj lost his show on Netflix, and he's still doing bits. He's got his own show. It's interesting and good.
Yeah.
We've seen, think, the reality that the diverse media landscape just gives these people so many choices for how they're going to do it. That the what that means is that, though, it does, we are dealing with an increasingly fragmented audience space, right? But like you said, I write about Colbert. I never watch him live, ever, unless it's like I've been flagged that this is going to be such an important episode and I should tune in.
Right.
What do you do? I watch it the next day.
I watch the clips on YouTube or on Twitter.
And mine on Instagram.
on Instagram too. I think there's a generational element here too, is that there's people probably we're all relatively in the same generation, and older get a lot of their news and they get a lot of their sort of like late night comedy in cheap television or cable news, where like younger generations, they're all watching the clips on Instagram or on social media somehow. I think that's actually what partially a lot of my parents' generation, my parents watch MSNBC all the time. Their extended network watch Fox or whatever. But I feel like there's like an element where the older generations are also going to be like missing what Colbert is talking about, since he's not going to be on late anymore.
That's 100% true, right? Yeah. So there are sort of the boomer.
I didn't want to say boomer, but yeah, boomer.
The boomers are the only ones who watch TV on TV.
Yeah.
When it actually is like slotted, right? Pretty much. No one else. Everyone's on demand if they're watching whole episodes. And so that's where things like the Nielsen ratings are a head scratcher, because Colbert had the top slot for his time among the other late night shows. And Fox News has been making a big thing out of Greg Gutfeld doing better than Colbert. But this is all very strange because, sure, the Fox News viewer is actually watching Fox News. They turn it on and they watch it. Whereas most of the people who are watching things like Kimmel or Fallon or Colbert are actually not watching it live when it comes out on TV. It's like if you look at Colbert's, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert's YouTube account, you'll see that there's 9 million followers. And so when they do the Nielsens that come out and say, oh, I don't know, Colbert has 2.8 million viewers, via Nielsen, that's not even close to the amount of actual viewers, right? Because there's YouTube, there's Instagram, there's Facebook. It's crazy, right? The different ways in which people are getting it. So I think that's part of a sign too of how we're seeing like complete, not just different viewer practices, but also challenges in determining what the actual viewership footprint looks like for a televised show. So using the Fox News comedian Greg Gutfeld as a parallel, Colbert comes out, he does a monologue. That monologue on YouTube is going to be seen maybe 4 million times, and Gutfeld's will be seen like 250,000. Like they're not, it's not close.
Yeah. That's how I watch it. I see stuff the next day on YouTube or Twitter or whatever. And I think it's important because earlier you made the point that the sky isn't falling, that we don't need to get too panicky right now. And one thing that I've really been following, it's a comedian I followed for quite some time, is Bill Burr, who has really all in recently. I think he's channeling kind of some phases of George Carlin. And it's a lot of it. It's about the Ouija. It's about Trump. It's about labor. It's about poverty and all this kind of stuff. Arguably the most popular comedian going right now. And I think that means that, do you think that means something? Or are we in a different period? Despite canceling Colbert, are there people out there who really are carrying this torch?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I see it in my line of research, can't imagine, right? People send me stuff that I didn't even know about. And they say, you got to watch this. And I watch it. It's really smart. That's really powerful. What I'm mostly interested in maybe is a little less on the sort of perspective of the celebrity satirist, but I'm fascinated by what that does to the consumer, right, of the satire. Because a lot of my research has looked at how does consuming satire flex the muscles for critical thinking? How does consuming satire flex the muscles to resist fascism? How does it help you deal with a creeping authoritarianism? And that research shows that the habit, I would say to people, I'm like, I don't care where you get your satire from. As long as you're seeing the world through irony, we're all better off. And the reason for this is that we have really conclusive data on how comedy helps with information recall, right? It helps boost memory. It helps boost logical thinking. It helps boost critical reasoning. It helps boost people's capacity to think with nuance. Like all of those sort of, I always say it's like taking your brain to the gym, right? But the other thing it does is it just unpacks these mainstream narratives that would suggest to you that it's either this or it's that. It's like, again, we're talking about the impact of canceling Colbert. What are we seeing in the media? It's either, oh, he had it coming because his show sucked, or it's, oh my God, we'll never get to say a mean joke about Trump again. This is terrible. And I'm here to tell your listeners, those two polls are stupid. That's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a far more complex media space and also political moment. And it's not that simple. It just isn't. And satire is so good at reminding people that these simple answers are just insufficient.
We really appreciate on short notice, we interrupt your vacation. Really appreciate you coming on, Sophia. And it's always great talking to you. It's nice to talk to somebody and have a, even if it's indirect, a laugh rather than the very serious things that I think all of us are kind of dealing with right now. So.
Yeah, this new book comes out. It's just an introduction to political satire, but I'll have to get it in your hands because what's kind of cool is that it does have this whole section on the things we can measure in terms of its actual impact and how it changes people. And that would be a fun conversation to have.
Hey, folks. So that was Professor Sophia McLennan, author of Trump Was a Joke, and professor at Penn State, a return guest talking to us about Trump and late night comedians and what's recently happened for Stephen Colbert in the late show and other topics. I just want to remind you that we're still supporting the Unions Power America sweepstakes. It's back, and you could win up to $40,000 in an epic trip to New York City. Enter today at unionpowerusa.com and boost your chances of winning some fun bonus activities. There's no purchase necessary. You can see the official rules at unionpowerusa.com. And then if you like what you're hearing, if you'd like these episodes on Green Red Podcast, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. If you are watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. And if you're listening to some of the many podcast audio platforms, give us a rate and review. It helps us with the algorithm. And then if you really like us, go to greenredpodcast.org and hit that support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. And until then, keep laughing, misbehave, make a lot of trouble, and we will talk to you again soon.